All right, legal minds out there, get ready, because today we're going deep, deep into a case that's, well, it's basically legendary in employment law, Griggs v. Duke Perico. You know, this case, it really changed how we think about discrimination at work, and it's still incredibly relevant, even today.
Yeah, you know, what's really fascinating about Griggs is that it brought up this idea that discrimination, well, it isn't always, you know, like this really obvious in your face kind of thing. It showed us that even policies that seem totally neutral, they can actually have a discriminatory impact. And that's something we're still, you know, dealing with, especially now with AI and all these new hiring tools.
Okay, so let's set the scene here. It's 1971, North Carolina, Duke Power Company. They had a history of, you know, segregating black workers, putting them in lower paying jobs. And now they've put these new hiring policies in place. You need a high school diploma, or you have to pass these two aptitude tests to get certain jobs or promotions. Now, on the surface, these requirements, they seem pretty fair, right? Like, maybe even colorblind, you could say.
Right. But the reality is, like, back in 1971, you know, requiring a high school diploma, it really impacted black applicants a lot more. Significantly fewer black men in North Carolina had high school diplomas compared to white men. And those aptitude tests, the passing rates were like drastically different along racial lines. So, you know, it raises some serious questions about whether these policies are really neutral or not.
So it's not just about, you know, what's written down. It's about the actual effect those requirements have on different groups.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what a group of black employees led by Willie Griggs argued when they filed that class action lawsuit against Duke Power. They said these hiring policies, you know, the ones that seem neutral, they were actually discriminatory, even if Duke Power didn't mean for them to be.
And that's where Griggs becomes so important, right? Because it really established the difference between disparate treatment and disparate impact. Disparate treatment, that's, you know, what we usually think of. You have to prove there was intentional discrimination. But disparate impact, it's a different thing. It recognizes that a policy or a practice, maybe it looks neutral on paper, but it still has like a discriminatory effect on a specific group, a protected group. And that's what the lawsuit against Duke Power was all about.
Right, right. But so the lower courts, they initially sided with Duke Power. They said there was no intent to discriminate.
Mm.
So how did this case end up all the way at the Supreme Court?
Well, the employees, you know, they weren't satisfied with the lower court's decisions and they appealed it, kept appealing all the way up. I mean, it really shows how strongly they felt that this was an injustice, how important this case was to them. And it's a good thing they did, because the Supreme Court, well, they sided with the employees and it was a unanimous decision. It was a huge decision. I mean, it really shook things up in employment law.
Wow. Talk about a David and Goliath moment, huh?
So what was the Supreme Court's reasoning for siding with those employees? Like, what were the legal principles they laid out that made this case so groundbreaking?
The court basically said, look, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, it's not just about proving intentional discrimination. It's not just about that disparate treatment we were talking about. It's also about recognizing that the effects of an employer's policies, they can be discriminatory, even if they don't mean for them to be. And that's the whole idea of disparate impact, recognizing that discrimination can be like built into systems and practices, even when they seem neutral.
So even if a company says, hey, we didn't mean to discriminate, and if their policies end up hurting a protected group, they can still be held accountable. That's a big change, you know, in how we think about the law. But does this mean like any policy that has a disparate impact is automatically illegal? Well, not necessarily. The Supreme Court, they introduced this really important idea, the business necessity defense. They said that if an employer's policy does have a disparate impact, you know, it disproportionately affects a certain group, they can still justify it. But they have to prove that the policy is like absolutely essential for the job.
So in Duke Power's case, they couldn't just say, oh, well, we just think a high school diploma is, you know, important. They had to prove that it was actually like truly necessary to be a janitor or to work at a power plant.
Exactly. And did those high school diploma requirements or those aptitude tests, did they really predict how well someone would do in those jobs? Well, no, the court found that they didn't. In fact, the tests weren't even designed for those jobs in the first place. So the court saw through Duke Power's, you know, their neutral act, you could say.
Yeah, yeah. That brings up a good question, though. If an employee files a lawsuit based on, you know, disparate impact, what do they have to prove? Do they have to prove intent? Or is it enough to just show that statistically there's a disparity?
Well, the first thing employees have to do is show that a specific policy or practice is causing a statistical disparity, you know, that it's leading to different outcomes for different groups. Once they show that, then the burden shifts to the employer. The employer has to justify that policy, and they have to use this business necessity argument.
So it's like a two-step process. First, the employee shows the disparity, and then the employer has to justify it. That's a pretty powerful tool for, you know, for someone who might want to sue.
It is. And to really drive the point home, Chief Justice Berger, the one who wrote the majority opinion, he was very clear about it. He talked about these kinds of policies, these seemingly neutral policies, as creating built-in headwinds for minorities. Basically, he was saying these policies, they're inherently stacked against minorities, even if they don't look like it at first.
It's really amazing, you know, how the court was able to see through those policies and the ones that seem so neutral and recognize, like, the real impact they were having. It kind of makes you think, how often are we, you know, missing that stuff, those neutral things that are actually, you know, not so neutral in our own lives, even in our work as lawyers?
That's a really interesting question. And it shows how powerful legal precedents like Griggs can be. They challenge what we think we know and force us to face, well, maybe some uncomfortable truths about the systems we work in. But the story of Griggs, it doesn't end there. It set a precedent that still shapes employment law today, and maybe in ways you wouldn't expect.
Okay, so you're saying a case from, what, 1971, it's still relevant today. In this world with, you know, all this technology changing so fast, how does a case about high school diplomas and those aptitude tests, how does that apply to, say, like AI being used in hiring?
Well, that's what's so amazing about landmark cases like Griggs. They establish these principles that they go beyond the specific technology or the historical context, you know? So even though AI and hiring tools might seem like a world away from what Griggs was about, those core principles, disparate impact, business necessity, they still apply.
Okay, I get that. But how does that actually work in practice? Like an algorithm, it's just looking at data, right? Mm-hmm. So how can it be discriminatory? It's just, you know, numbers.
That's a really common misunderstanding. Algorithms are, well, they're only as good as the data they learn from. And if that data reflects biases, you know, historical biases, like maybe certain groups were underrepresented in certain fields because of past discrimination, well, the algorithm can actually learn to repeat those biases, even if the people who programmed it, you know, they didn't intend for that to happen.
So it's like the algorithm is inheriting these prejudices from the past, even if it's all dressed up as, you know, objective data science and all that. It's kind of, well, it's a little unsettling.
It is. And that's why Griggs is so important in this new, you know, this new world of technology. It gives us a way to challenge these AI hiring practices. If an algorithm is shown to have a disparate impact on a protected group, well, then the employer, it's on them. They have to show that the algorithm is really job related, that it's necessary.
So it's the same idea as that business necessity defense that Duke Power tried to use, except now it's not about high school diplomas. It's about, you know, justifying the algorithms.
Exactly. Let me give you a real world example here. There was this case. It involved an AI hiring tool. A big tech company was using it. The tool was supposed to scan resumes and, you know, find the top candidates. But it turned out that it was systematically downgrading resumes from women, even if the women had the same qualifications as the men.
Wait, so the algorithm was like doing the same kind of thing that the Supreme Court, you know, that they identified in Griggs?
Yeah, exactly. And this case went to court and the company had to defend using that algorithm. They said, well, it's objective and it's efficient and we didn't mean to discriminate. But the court, they used the principles from Griggs and they said, nope, you haven't shown that this algorithm is truly job related, that it's necessary. In fact, the court found that the algorithm was basically continuing those old gender biases that, you know, have always existed in the tech industry.
So even though technology has changed so much since, you know, 1971, Griggs is still relevant. It gives us this legal framework to hold employers accountable, you know, for the discriminatory effects of what they do, whether it's high school diplomas, aptitude tests, or even, you know, these fancy algorithms. It's like Griggs, in a way, it was almost like it predicted these challenges of the digital age.
I think that's a really really insightful point. Griggs, it gave us this flexible framework that, you know, we can apply it to new technologies as they come along. And it's not just AI either. Griggs has been used to challenge all sorts of policies that seem neutral but have a disparate impact, even beyond hiring.
Okay, I'm interested to hear more. So how has Griggs been used in other areas of employment law? Like, what are some examples where these principles, disparate impact, business necessity, where have they come up?
Well, think about... Think about height and weight requirements for certain jobs. In the past, a lot of employers, they use those requirements to screen out, well, women or people from certain ethnic groups. After Griggs, though, those requirements started getting challenged in court, and the court started looking at them more closely.
Yeah, I bet those requirements would be hard to justify, you know, with that business necessity defense, unless the job really truly required a certain height or weight, like a, I guess a firefighter who has to carry heavy equipment or something.
Exactly. The courts realized that these requirements, they were often arbitrary and they had a disproportionate impact on certain groups. And unless the employer could show a real business necessity, like, you know, the height or weight requirement was actually essential to do the job safely and effectively, then the court would say, nope, that's discriminatory and strike it down.
Makes sense. Any other examples come to mind?
Another area where Griggs has been really influential is challenging the use of arrest records in hiring. You see, having an arrest record but no conviction, it can really impact people of color more because of, you know, the systemic biases in the criminal justice system. But using that arrest record to deny someone a job, well, that can be challenged under Griggs.
So just because someone was arrested doesn't mean they did anything wrong. And using that against them, well, that could be seen as having a disparate impact, right?
Right. And unless the employer can show a clear business necessity, like maybe the job involves working with vulnerable people and a background check is required by law, then using that arrest record to say no to someone, it could be discriminatory under Griggs.
It's like Griggs really opened up this whole conversation about hidden biases and how important it is to look at the real impact of policies, even when they seem neutral. It's about, you know, going beyond those surface level justifications and really asking, is this fair? Does everyone have an equal opportunity here?
Couldn't have said it better myself. Griggs, it forced employers to be more aware of what they were doing, to really think about how their decisions might affect different groups. It's not just about avoiding like outright discrimination. It's about proactively creating a workplace that's, you know, truly fair and inclusive.
That's a powerful point. But I imagine there are still, you know, debates and challenges when it comes to applying Griggs, especially since the law is always changing. You're right. Putting legal stuff into practice, it's always more complicated than it seems when you're, you know, just reading about it. But even with all those debates going on, it's clear, Griggs, it was a big turning point. It's not just the facts of the case. It's the whole conversation that started about, you know, systemic bias and how employers, they have to make sure there's equal opportunity.
Absolutely. Griggs didn't just, you know, change the law. It changed how we understand what discrimination even is, you know, how it works. Before Griggs, people mostly thought of discrimination as this like intentional thing. Someone decides to treat someone else badly because of their race, gender, you know, things like that.
So it was about like individual people being prejudiced, not the systems themselves.
Exactly. But Griggs changed that. It showed that discrimination could be part of these policies and practices that seem totally neutral. Even if nobody's like consciously trying to discriminate, it made people realize that discrimination can be, you know, built right into how our institutions work.
And that, I mean, that must have been a huge deal for the civil rights movement.
It was. Griggs gave them a legal way to fight those systemic inequalities, not just individual acts of prejudice. It helped push for bigger social changes, you know, things like affirmative action and other things that try to level the playing field for groups that have been marginalized.
So Griggs wasn't just about winning one lawsuit. It was about changing how we think about, you know, discrimination and inequality as a whole. It's like you gave people a new way to see the world, a way to see those hidden structures that, you know, that create disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But did everyone accept that? I mean, a decision this big, I can't imagine there wasn't any pushback.
You're right, of course. Like with any, you know, big social progress, there were people who criticized Griggs, people who pushed back against it. Some people said that, you know, the Griggs standard, it put too much on businesses, that it would make it harder to hire good people and stifle innovation and all that. Others said that focusing on disparate impact was like reverse discrimination, that it unfairly favored minorities over other people.
It sounds like a lot of the arguments we hear today about affirmative action, diversity initiatives, that kind of thing, they come from the same reactions people had to Griggs back then.
Exactly. Griggs forced society to like really deal with this complicated question. How do you fix historical injustices? How do you create a society that's truly fair? And those conversations, well, they can be hard. They can make people uncomfortable, especially when they challenge those deep-seated beliefs that people have.
It's like peeling an onion. You start with this you know, seemingly simple legal case, and suddenly you're dealing with centuries of inequality and trying to figure out how to create lasting change.
That's a great analogy. And Griggs v. Duke Power Co., it was definitely a key moment in that journey toward a more just and equitable society. It changed the way we think about things, gave us a new way to understand discrimination and how much it affects our lives.
So for anyone in the legal world, you know, Griggs, it's not just some case you have to memorize for a test. It's a legal precedent that's still alive. You know, it's still shaping the world today. And for anyone who cares about social justice, it's a reminder that the fight for equality, it never really ends.
Mm-hmm.
We have to constantly be looking at our systems, our practices, and making sure we're creating a society where everyone truly has a chance to, you know, to thrive.
Well said. And as we wrap up this deep dive into Griggs, it's good to think about how those lessons from the case, how we can use them for the challenges we're facing today. How can we use these ideas of disparate impact and business necessity to create workplaces that are more fair? How can we make sure that new technology, AI, and all that is being used in a way that promotes fairness and gives everyone a chance? These are questions we need to really think about as we, you know, as we continue to learn from Griggs v. Duke Power Co.
It's been a really interesting conversation. Lots to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into one of the most important cases in American legal history.